as if someone had drenched his left leg with acid. He cried out, clutching at the greasy mess of blankets on which he lay. Cold air on his thigh, his knee, his foot, and the rough clawed hands of the Homerian-style bull yak taping a splint into his leg. The wrench of it made him cry out.
"Suck it up, trooper,"
Ugbuzz said. He was in a hut. A hut? The ceiling, only a meter or two above his head, was made of plastic piping, roofed with pieces of stormtrooper armor and mess hall plates, held together with wire and engine tape. Glow rods dangled from the piping rafters, their trailing wires plugged into a backpack-sized power cell in the corner, providing the only illumination. Beyond the doorway, he could see the gray steel walls of some larger space, a gym or a cargo hold.
"Now I'll have no malingering in my unit, mister,"
grunted Ugbuzz when Bulyak turned away.
"We've had some losses, and we've had some injured, but those mutineers aren't going to interfere with our mission."
"What about Trooper Mingla, sir? Skinny blonde kid?"
"Missing. Festering mutineers. Sons of sows. We'll get 'em."
Slowly, agonizingly, Luke tried to get to his feet. Bulyak snarled something at him and thrust a stick into his hand. It had clearly started life as a pole arm of some weapon brought from Pazab, 6 feet of knobbed and hand-smoothed wood. The sow shoved him in the direction of the hut's door with a violence that nearly had him on the floor again. Luke looked around. 2 dozen huts had been erected, ranged around the walls of what looked like a cargo hold. In the dark, open doorway of the vast chamber, 3PO stood waiting.
"Did you see what happened to Cray? Ugba says she's missing."
"She was carried away by the Clang tribe. They seem to regard the Gakfids as mutineers, and vice versa. Nikos went after them."
3PO clanked softly along at Luke's side as Luke stumbled out into the corridor.
"They shouldn't be too hard to find."
Luke was checking every door as they passed, mostly cargo holds.
"I'm not sure of that, sir. The SP-80 cleaner droids were very diligent about scrubbing all trace of their trail from the walls and floors."
They came upon a hatch cover that had been ripped loose, and wires and cables trailed out into the hall. As he limped nearer, Luke smelled a familiar odor.
Jawas?
If 3PO had possessed lungs, he would have heaved a long-suffering sigh.
"I'm afraid so, sir. It appears that on such planets where the Empire posted troops to be picked up for this mission 30 years ago, the automated landers collected whatever sentient beings they could find."
"Oh, great." Luke bent to study the frame of the gutted hatch. It was grubby with small handprints. He wondered how many of the meter-tall, brown-robed scavengers the lander had picked up on Tatooine.
"Those white aliens we saw in the mess hall were Tals from Alzok 3. I have not been very far afield, Master Luke, but I know there are also Apotekans from Dom Braden aboard, and the Maker only knows what else besides."
"Great," said Luke again, limping on. "So in order to blow up the ship before it reaches Plawal, I'm going to have to find the troop transports and somehow get everybody on board. I suppose I could always tell the Gamorreans its orders, but..."
He hesitated, remembering the vicious skill of the ship's gunner, which 3PO insisted was automated.
"Here," said Luke, "this looks like what we're after." The small office had clearly belonged to a quartermaster. A black wall-mounted desk bore a large curved keyboard and a monitor screen. Luke typed in "Mission Status Request." The screen read, "Mission time consonant with the objectives of the will."
"Huh?"
Luke typed "Menu." "Current status aligned with timetable of the will. No further information necessary."
"They really didn't want to risk anyone outside finding out about their mission, did they?" murmured Luke.
"When did the last lander come about, 3PO?
"Yesterday. Those were the Tals."
He typed "Schematic." A deck plan appeared, but the computer refused to display any but decks 10 through 13. Suddenly all the lights browned out, and the pale blue letters of the monitor shrank into a tiny dot and blinked away. From the blackness of the corridor outside came Jawa voices and the scrabble of fleeing feet. Luke sighed. "I've got a bad feeling about this."
Down in the sick bay, most of the equipment had been scavenged by Jawas. The Bacta tank had leaked half its contents onto the floor in a gigantic sticky pool. So much for the possibility of standard regenerative therapy. Luke planted a Peregrine patch on his thigh just above the knee and immediately felt the pain lessen.
"Okay, 3PO," he said. "Let's see about finding Kray in this place."
In the dark corridors around sickbay, the fluffy white creatures, Tals, as 3PO identified them, fled from them like enormous powder puffs. From the pitch-black maws of holes and wards, little quadrangles of eyes glittered out at him in the bobbing reflection of the glow rods 3PO held aloft for light. They found the corpse of an Athetekan, the gory vegetable people of Dombraden. MSE droids crawled over it like greedy insects, trying vainly to clean a mess beyond their small capacities. A scream echoed down the darkened corridor from the direction of the Gakfed village in the cargo hold. Luke started toward the sound at a staggering run. The Gamorrean stormtroopers had gotten a shredder from someplace and were holding a Jawa by the wrists above it, lowering it feet first into the whirring blades. There were four or five of them, including Ugbuzz, all howling with laughter as they dipped their wretched little brown cape captive up and down. Luke reached out with the Force and swatted the shredder away with such violence that it spattered to pieces on the wall 10 meters away.
"What's the meaning of this, trooper?"
demanded Ugbuzz furiously.
"That was a rebel saboteur out to thwart our mission. Who do you think you are?"
Luke lowered his voice and spoke for Ugbuzz's ears alone.
"I am Major Calrissian, Special Services." He gave the serial number of the Millennium Falcon's engine block. 229811B, Intelligence.
Ugbuzz's hairy ear shifted forward in awe and respect.
"It's all right," Luke said. "You did as you thought best. But the Jawa was acting under my orders, infiltrating the rebels. You did as you thought right to protect the mission, and I'll see your name shows up in commendations. But after this, let me interrogate prisoners."
Luke used the Force to subtly project into Ugbuzz's mind the pleased warmth that surety of approval brings.
"Very good, Master Luke," said 3PO softly when Luke, weak with exhaustion, reached the door once more. "If you'll come this way, sir, I believe I found a partial schematic of the ship."
The schematic of decks 10 through 13 was etched onto four crystal plex panels in what was probably the office of the physical plant manager, but it still revealed nothing of the areas below deck 10 and above deck 13. He learned enough from the schematic to find the hangar bay on deck 10. Because of the hangar's proximity to the sick bay, Luke bet that it was where the lander that had carried them in had docked. They did indeed find the lander on deck 10, but its engines were dead and the tracker droids were nowhere to be seen. By judicious manipulation of the controls of a service lift, Luke managed to freeze the lift car between decks 10 and 9 and to get the doors open at least somewhat. He'd climbed into the hangar immediately below on deck 9. The bay was designed to accommodate a medium-sized launch, but it contained only a charred and battered Y-wing craft. "It explains what happened." Luke sank gratefully into one of the white plastic mess hall chairs and accepted the plate 3PO handed him. Reconstituted and radiation-packed, maybe, and bearing only nominal resemblance to actual Dubak steak and creamed tapatos, but close enough. "As Triv told us, the Eye of Palpatine, the whole Belsavis mission, was set up to be a secret. That's why they automated everything, so there would be no leaks. But there was a leak, 3PO. Somebody found out and came to the Moonflower Nebula. Their Y-wing got shot to pieces by the auto-defenses, which are the closest thing to human I've ever seen. But they made it in. They disabled the Eye's triggering mechanism, so no signal could come in to start the mission. Then they took the launch from the hangar and fled."
"I see. But if the signal relay was destroyed, what started it up again? After 30 years?
A horrible cacophony of shouts sounded in the corridor. It was a member of the Clag tribe in full and terrified flight from 15 Gakfeds howling, waving axes and force pikes. Luke said,
Come on. He'll be heading back to his home territory. Luke crossed the mess hall to the opposite doors, knowing that the corridor down which the Gakfeds had chased their prey led nowhere, and the Clag would have to double back. Sure enough, moments later, the fugitive Gamorrean was back, having temporarily lost his pursuers, and Luke followed him. As he had half suspected, the Clag was heading aft. They crossed chamber after chamber of armories and looted weapons holds. At an open lift car, the Clag prodded angrily at the buttons, obviously wanting one that read higher than 13. There was a rumble of shouts coming closer. The Clag lumbered on until he reached a black door, double blast sealed and surmounted with a crimson light. He jabbed at the switch with no result, then pulled out a blaster and shot the whole mechanism. The door jarred a little in its socket and a voice said,
"Entry to upper levels in this area is unauthorized. Security measures are in force."
The Clag ripped loose the cover plate. The door opened to reveal a gangway of black metal steps and gray walls, checkered with squares of opalescent light set in a curious asymmetrical pattern.
"Maximum measures will be taken. Maximum measures will be taken. Maximum..."
"Blast the stinking mutineer swine."
As Ugbuzz and his troopers emerged from a corridor 20 meters away, the Clag plunged up the gangway. He raced up 5 or 10 steps before the lightning started. Thin, vicious fingers of it stabbing out from the walls, playing over his body like a delicate skeleton spider torturing its prey. He screamed, fell, his big body spasming, flopping on the black metal of the stairs. The pursuing Gakfed skidded to a halt at the door, staring up in momentary shock. Then they began to laugh. Luke turned away, almost ill, and headed back toward the computer in the quartermaster's office. He had to find Cray. Torturing the Jawa had been petty viciousness. The Clag had been an enemy. And the Clag would see Cray as an enemy of theirs. Especially, he thought, after the death of their mate in that gangway.
"I do wish R2 was here, sir," said 3PO. "He's much better at talking to these supercomputers than I." "Oh, shoo, you nasty little thing."
"What do you want, little guy?" Luke asked. It was the Jawa Luke had saved that morning.
"Master."
The slangy, squeaky patois of the desert was almost unintelligible. The Jawa reached into its robes.
"For you."
It held out a lightsaber. Leia strolled toward the Muna Center archives, R2 in her wake. It had grown dark. Silver-winged moths fluttered crazily around the lamps. Pittons and mooklas hunted frogs beneath the bridges. The world smelled of sweet-growing things, of grass and fruit. Abruptly, R2-D2 made a right-angle turn and trundled off into the foggy darkness to her right. Leia turned, startled.
"R2?"
The ground dipped sharply beneath her feet. She heard R2's startled tweet. The crash of something falling. Branches caught at her hair. The little astromech droid had come to a stop at the base of a wall, was pressed against it, and still trying vainly to go forward. "R2, stop!" The whirring of the gears halted.
"R2, what is it? What happened?"
Luke was better at understanding the little droid than she was, though she could interpret some of his beeps and warbles. But the reply he made told her nothing. "Well, let's not stand around here in the dark. Let's see if we can get back to the path." It wasn't easy between the dark and the mushy unevenness of the ground. Leia looked up and saw someone standing at the top of the slope under the yellow blur of the light. She thought, what's she doing here? Why had she thought that? It wasn't anyone she knew. Was it? A school friend? Someone from the Senate? Someone she had met at one of those endless diplomatic receptions on Coruscant? When she reached the top of the slope, the woman was gone. C-3PO didn't like the idea.
"You can't trust those Jawas, Master Luke. There has to be a gangway somewhere that isn't wired."
Luke contemplated the repair shaft hatch cover the Jawa had removed from the wall in one of the laundry drop rooms. In the dark of the shaft above, he heard the rat rustle of the Jawa's robes halt, a piping squeal.
"Master!"
"If I don't track an armory down now, I may not get another chance," Luke said. Following the Jawa, he ducked his head through the hatch, reached across the narrow shaft to seize the rungs attached like staples along the side, and hopped across, wincing with pain. The tube smelled fusty of lubricants and insulation, and now, overwhelmingly, of Jawa, but it lacked the characteristic slightly greasy smell of air recycled countless times through the noses and lungs of a living crew. Even with the vessel's current bizarre populations, it would be long before it acquired that smell. Longer than they'd be aboard. Longer than this weird mission would last. What had started it up again? When 3PO had asked why the Eye of Palpatine's signal relay had started up again, the droid had put his intricately jointed metal finger on the crux of the problem. The Eye of Palpatine had been wrought in secret for a secret purpose, a mission which had been thwarted. It had lain sleeping in its remote screen of spinning asteroids in the heart of the Moonflower Nebula for 30 years, while the new order that had planned that mission, armed the ship's guns, and programmed the will's single-minded control had risen to power and then cracked apart under the weight of its own callousness, monomania, and greed. The stormtroopers stationed on half a dozen remote worlds of the Rim had grown old and died. Palpatine himself had died at his own dark pupil's hand. So why had the will awakened? The shaft topped out in a thick barred metal grill painted garish warning yellow and black. Affixed to it was a sign, "Enclision Grid, No Further Ascent, Danger." Beyond the bars, Luke could just distinguish a lateral repair conduit through which the cables of the ascending shaft continued. The walls of the conduit gleamed with opaline squares. Just beneath the metal safety bars, a ring of dirty fingerprints around an open hatchway showed clearly which course the Jawa had taken. Luke dragged himself through. It was the gun room. On the console, screen after screen, large and small, regarded him with dead obsidian eyes. In the center of the chamber, a ceiling panel had been removed, and a barred grill, like the one that had blocked further ascent in the repair shaft, lay propped in a corner. A tug on his belt caught his attention. The Jawa pawed at the lightsaber it had brought him. After a moment's hesitation, Luke yielded it, and the Jawa ran to a spot directly under the open shaft. It set the weapon on the floor, considered it for a moment, then moved it a few centimeters and changed the angle, clearly recreating the exact position in which it had been found. Luke hobbled over to it and looked up. The shaft led to the heart of the ship. He understood. Someone had ascended that shaft 30 years ago. There had been two of them who'd made it onto the ship in the battered Y-wing he'd found. One had taken the launch and left, probably arguing that reinforcements should be sought. The other had known or guessed that there might not be time before the ship jumped to hyperspace to start its mission. And that other had remained to attempt to disarm the will. The deadly inclusion grid seemed to grin like pale, waiting teeth. Luke turned the weapon in his hand, knowing instinctively that it had been a woman who had made it, who had wielded it. He wondered if the Force could be used to hold off the blue lightning threads of the inclusion grid long enough for him to get up the shaft to the ship's computer core. The thought of trying it turned him cold. Once in the core, it should be fairly simple to trigger an overload to destroy the Eye of Palpatine as it should have been destroyed 30 years ago. The Jedi who had ascended that shaft had lived long enough to damage the ship's activation trigger and had died up in the core, while the will itself had been left alive. Because she hadn't been quite strong enough? Quite experienced enough? Or was the inclusion grid something not even the strength of a master could outlast? Luke was in the quartermaster's office with 3PO, trying yet again to get some information from the will, when the speaker on the wall sounded a triple chime, and green lights flared in the comm screen above the desk.
Attention, all personnel. Tomorrow at 1300 hours, an internal security hearing will be broadcast on all ships' channels.
The screen sprang to life. Luke saw the image of Cray,
her hands bound, her mouth sealed shut with engine tape, her dark eyes wide and scared and furious, being held between two Gamorrean troopers, clags by their helmets.
Observation of this hearing is mandatory for all personnel.
A corner of a makeshift hut intruded on the scene, part of a packing box with a roof made of what looked like a survival tarp. Clag village, Luke thought. Nico stood by the hut, a restraining bolt riveted to his chest, and wretched, haunted horror in his eyes.
Sorry, son, but we have orders to find the rebel saboteurs before they wreck the ship.
Ugbuzz nodded to himself, as if savoring the orders of the will. Luke extended the power of the Force. It's vital that we find the Clag stronghold immediately.
Sure it's vital, Clag's sons of sows. But we have orders to find the rebel saboteurs before they wreck the ship.
It was a programmed loop. Luke knew he wouldn't be able to get past it. He and 3PO would have to separate and continue the search for Kray on their own. Down a darkened hall on Deck 15, Luke saw a square of light on the wall. Shadows passed across it, and he heard the mutter of voices.
All gunner reports clear, Commander.
Incoming reports on status of scouts, sir.
Luke relaxed. The lisping musicality of the voices indicated that he just stumbled on an enclave of Athatecans. The room was some kind of operations systems node, more likely connected to the ship's recycling and water pumping lines than to its weaponry. Not that it mattered to the Athatecans, the gorgeous inhabitants of Dombraden, petaled, tasseled, tufted, and fluttering with hundreds of tendrils and shoots, were bent over the circuit tracers and inventory processors, tapping the responseless keyboards and gazing into the blank screens with the intensity of Imperial guards on a mission from Palpatine himself. And perhaps they thought they were. Luke had never quite been able to tell about the Athatecans. Luke limped out into the corridor. He stopped, his hair prickling. He smelled sand people. Idiot, he thought, as his whole body turned cold. If the Landers picked up Jawas from Tatooine, you should have known they'd pick up sand people as well. They could be behind him, tall, rag-wrapped shapes like vicious scarecrows mummified in sand, crouched in one of the dark cabins, listening for his dragging footfalls. Luke flung himself toward the nearest room as a searing blast of rifle fire scorched panels all around him. He was in a cabin like the one he'd come back to consciousness in. A panel that led to the repair shaft wouldn't budge. The door heaved, shook. As the lock was subjected to rifle fire, the door opened the slit. Blaster fire roared through, raking the small room. Luke flattened into a corner to keep from getting fried by strays. If he could use the Force to blow the doors outward, to hurl himself through in a flying levitation, it might buy him a few seconds. It was absurd, but he was summoning his energy to try it anyway, when a faint clanging noise by his right foot drew his attention. The repair shaft cover plate had fallen neatly inward. Luke ducked through, pushed the panel back into place behind him. There was a lock mechanism on it, too, and latched it again. Everywhere he had traversed this vessel, he had felt the malignant intelligence of the will keeping track of him. For the first time, he had the oddest feeling that it wasn't the will alone observing him. It certainly hadn't been the will that had undone the lock on that hatch.
Well, Chewie, I guess we do this the hard way,
Han said. He thought he had figured out a way to get into the crypts beneath Klett's house, but the well cover turned out to be made not of Durasteel as it looked, but some kind of non-ferrous metal. Han took a small drill from the utility kit Chewbacca handed him and hooked it into a backpack power cell. By the light of Chewbacca's torch, he fastened bolts to the cover and affixed the anti-grav generator. The cover lifted easily. As Han had thought, there were handholes cut into the rock of the shaft below. He grabbed hold and started down. Far down the shaft, a door led into a passageway. The illuminator beam played across old scarring in the walls, places where the moss on the floor had been gouged and regrown. Han bent and picked something out of the moss. In the beam of his flash, it glinted dirty yellowish. Dark lines intricately stitched its surface.
Xylan, he said. A memory chip. If old Plett was the hot stuff botanist everybody says he was, the place would have been stuffed with sequencers and tanks and what all else. People like Drub McCum probably came around to strip it. What's the price of Xylan on the open market these days, Chewie?
Chewbacca disclaimed expertise in commodities, but Han knew that the Xylan backing of that single old-fashioned chip would have paid for a gown for Leia several times over. He slipped the chip in his pocket. The tunnel climbed, following the network of old volcanic passages and underground riverbeds that eventually opened into the great chasm of the Plawal Rift itself. They followed the scratched marks on the floor to a wide cavern and crossed a narrow wooden bridge above a cleft from which steam and subterranean gases rose. At one end of the cavern, a room had been cut in the rock. It was littered with plastic boxes and the small flat packets smugglers used for storing goods behind hull panels or under floor sections. In another room, they found the jewels. Han's light threw rainbows from the three boxes ranged along the wall. He stooped, brought up dirty, encrusted earrings, chains, pendants. Chewie held up a plastic packing crate half filled with Xylan chips. Their eyes met, baffled.
That doesn't make any sense.
Han ran his fingers through the chips. They were jumbled together with electronic salvage, gold wire, power cells, selenium.
This stuff hasn't been touched. There must be 750,000 credits in this room.
Chewie held up his paw and made a sign to kill the light. There was something in the corridor. Stray hot wind down the tunnels brought a feral stink. Whatever it was big. Han threw the full force beam directly at the source of the sound. It flared in yellow eyes, slashing brown teeth. Chewie's blaster bolt went wild and spattered, ricocheting crazily in the narrow space while the creature threw itself on the Wookiee. Han plunged in with his knife, stabbing at the creature's back as it bore Chewbacca to the ground. Han twisted loose from the first attacker as it slumped, grabbed the Luminator and Chewbacca's dropped rifle, and the Wookiee rolled to his feet, leapt over the corpse, and pelted away into the dark. Han dashed after him, firing back, the bolt hissing from wall to wall, revealing the shambling, filthy things on their heels. Back that way! Chewie's long legs took him far ahead down the tunnel. He and Han scrambled toward the dark cleft of the entry to the tunnel. The beam of the Luminator caught the glint of something in the tunnel, rounded and shiny like scales of some monstrous thing. Something like wet cobblestones that suddenly seemed to carpet the wall, ceiling, and floor of the tunnel. Kretch! Coming closer, Han and Chewbacca could see that they were small, scab-colored insectile creatures with two sets of jaws, serrated teeth, and jointed backs. They exuded a smell like fruit in the final stages of decomposition. The tunnel leading back toward the well was choked with them. Han screamed something entirely inadequate to the occasion and plunged away to his left, Chewie at his heels, and all the legions of darkness shrieking behind.
Got to find a way back, panted Han desperately. Back to the vaults.
Two black forms sprang suddenly into the glare of the Luminator.
On second thought, let's go this way.
Chewie caught his arm, stopping him, and roared a challenge into the darkness ahead of them.
A challenge was screamed in return.
Great,
Han said, raising the light. It picked up the eyes of the things scuffling, shambling, running toward them. Chewbacca fired a bowcaster bolt that went through the chest of something that looked as if it had once been a flat-headed parasite. It kept on coming, crawling, leaving a broad, bloody smear in its wake.
We can pick him off the path!
The second group of attackers was already halfway to the head of the path. One of them went for Chewbacca, slashing at him with a metal bar. Chewbacca fired his bowcaster, and the impact knocked the attacker backward into an old mud pit, filled with what Han took for a pale, delicate formation of curled and cranial-looking sinter or limestone. As the attacker, he looked like he had been a Maluki before madness and neglect had turned him to a screaming beast, went sprawling into the pit. The limestone formation came alive, a sudden heaving of rippling, fleshy, carnivorous mold. Behind, in the darkness, more shrieks resounded, but Han dared not look back to see what other creatures were emerging in pursuit. At the top of the path was a well.
By the white glow of the illuminator, Han could see the thing shambling up the path behind them, shrieking from madness-twisted faces. Some still wore the rags of what had been clothing and waved makeshift knives and clubs. Some had been human.
Down the well! There's a way out! That water's flowing! I can hear it!
Han stepped off the edge and dropped. Han and Chewbacca lay for a long time on the grass beside the warm spring, gasping for air like half-drowned vermin belched from some Coruscant sewer. Han rolled over and said, "I'm getting too old for this." Watching Kray's face, Luke tried to ascertain whether she was still under the influence of the Will's programming. From the small image on the Deck 10 lounge vidscreen, it wasn't easy to tell. Bruises marked her cheeks and chin and her shoulder, visible through a tear in her tunic. Her pale hair, now cropped short, was stiff with sweat and grime. A fat white clag boar stood not far away.
"Kinfarg," explained Ugbuzz, who was standing at Luke's side. "Captain of the stinking clag sons of sows.
Vert made your turn against your vow to the Imperial service and joined the rebels, Trooper Mingla,"
Kinfarg demanded. Kray straightened up. Luke wondered where Nikos was, whether he was in the room with her, held by his restraining bolt.
"It has yet to be established that I have done anything of the sort, Commander Kinfarg."
Behind Kinfarg on the black podium screen, green letters rippled to life. "You are a known associate of other rebel spies and saboteurs. You have assisted saboteurs in damaging the fabric of this vessel and thus jeopardizing its mission."
"That's a complete and absolute falsehood."
Kray was almost in tears of fury. Apprehension turned Luke cold as the screen flashed a new message. "In view of the prisoner's intransigence, it is the decision of the Will that Trooper Kray Mingla be executed by laser inclusion at 1600 hours tomorrow. Absence from viewing lounge will be construed as sympathy with the ill intentions of the prisoner." The screen went dark.
"Let's go," Luke said softly to 3PO. "There's something I want to try up on Deck 15.
"Great galaxies, Captain. There's hundreds of them."
The Avatecan second-in-command swung away from the blank screen. They were in the central lounge of Deck 15, this time bent intently over the dead consoles of games and visi-readers.
"We'll have them yelling for their mothers before we are through,"
cried the captain, his color a delicious pink grading into magenta, extravagant with stalks and tassels. Luke and 3PO approached.
"Major Calrissian, Special Services,"
Luke saluted, a gesture which the captain returned smartly.
"New assignment, sir, which supersedes all previous orders. There's been a minor malfunction of the schematics library. Sabotage, we think. We need to know the location and status of all transport craft on board."
"You can count on us, Major. Men?"
While the captain outlined the new assignment, Luke and 3PO slipped away to continue their exploration of the ship. Luke tried programming an SP-80 droid to track the clags the way it located garbage. As they followed the droid, Luke glanced back over his shoulder and noticed that the corridor entrance through which they had come was now shut.
"The Will," Luke thought. "It's hurting us, pushing us the way it wants us to go."
Clanking softly, the SP-80 turned down a long corridor on the starboard side of the ship. Though no damage by Jawas was evident, the lights were gone here, too, and as he and 3PO drew farther from the lighted area and the reflections of its glow got more and more dim, Luke sensed ever more strongly the presence of an unknown watching entity. He kept as close to 3PO as he could, matching his halting stride to the droids, and making sure there was never a space between them when they passed under the periodic blast doors. The SP-80 turned a corner. A stair led up into pitchy night. The droid's short legs negotiated the gangway, and feeling the prickling sensation of a trap, Luke extended his arm sharply to stop 3PO from following it.
He held out a glow rod toward the opening of the stairs. The light was flung back by the pearly squares of an inclusion grid. The SP ascended unharmed out of his sight. Good heavens! 3PO stepped closer to the door. It's definitely some sort of inclusion grid, sir, but obviously deactivated. Possibly the Jawas... No. Luke leaned against the wall, his leg beginning to throb as the first relief of the Perrigan wore off. No, the will wouldn't have herded us to a gangway that was disabled. It's just waiting until we're too far up to turn back. Slowly, the heavy mechanical stride of the SP droid faded. In the darkness, the ship seemed to press on them, waiting for them to follow it up the wired stair. Luke rushed as fast as he could back to the area of lights. The Apothecans were waiting for them, like an ambulatory garden of enormous flowers.
"We've located the transport craft, sir," said the captain.
The post seemed to have shifted to a stocky tubulet of blue and white.
"Two Beta-class Telgorns with a capacity of 120 apiece in the Deck 16 port-side landing bays. This way, sir."
3PO protested.
"Even if you are able to pilot one or both transport craft, sir, however will you prevent the defenses of the Eye of Palpatine from destroying them?"
"I don't know." Luke wondered how he'd managed to get himself elected savior to the ship of fools. But if I'm going to destroy the ship before it attacks Belsavis, 3PO, I've got to get everyone off it somehow. I can't leave... They turned a corner and Luke halted, shocked. The corridor was strewn with the hacked and dismembered bodies of Apothecans. The blue and white captain and its followers kept walking through the carnage as if there were nothing there. Luke smart ducked and had his lightsaber ready as the weighted end of a gaff stick nearly took his head off. Four sand people had sprung from the pump station behind him and fell on him, howling. Luke slashed the first one clean through the body, shoulder to hip, and took the hands off a second as it was bringing its rifle to bear.
Master Luke! Master Luke!
3PO was knocked over in the fray. Switch off! Luke dropped his blade a split second before another blast of shot came at him. He lunged through a doorway, hitting the closer, which refused to work. Luke levitated a work table and hurled it at the sand people, scrambling across the room to the opposite door and hit the opener, which also refused to work. Luke cursed, ducking a roaring blaze of blaster fire. He reached out with his mind and flicked the ricocheting bolt into the door mechanism. The door jerked up, and Luke rolled under it and scrambled to his feet. He seemed to be in the heart of the Sand People's hunting territory. Two more sprang at him from opposite sides, pressing him back into a corner. He sliced and parried, then fled again, flinging himself around a corner. The corridor in which he found himself was very dark. Shut doors, no vents, no cover. Then, halfway down, a door opened. It didn't hiss and spring as automatic doors did. The laborious creaking was more characteristic of someone turning the manual crank. He stepped closer. Through the opening, he could see the dark consoles of one of the lower-level gunnery chambers. Luke glanced back over his shoulder at the darkness, full of cries of the approaching sand people. Then he stepped very quickly through the door. It slid shut. The door rattled under the blows of the sand people, but held. It occurred to Luke that the will had effectively imprisoned him here. All it needed to do was not open the gunroom door again, ever. The silence returned, lengthened. After a very long time, the door opened. Again, that narrow crack. Again, that labor-dragging motion as if against the strength of the will. Aching, he limped toward it. Movement caught his eye. Startled, he turned, but it was only his own reflection in the dark mirror of the nearest monitor screen. And beside it, just past his shoulder, he saw another face. A young woman's face, framed in a cloud of smoky brown hair, the gray eyes looking into his. He swung around sharply, but of course there was no one there.
What? Who is it?
Leia prodded her husband's shoulder. I told you we should have waited for her to call back. She turned back to the hollow image of the woman in the field, fiery hair tousled, green eyes blinking. She wore a gold chain around her neck and a shirt Leia recognized as belonging to Lando Calrissian. Mara, sorry to wake you.
No, it's all right.
Mara Jade, the one-time Imperial agent known as the Emperor's Hand, later freelance smuggler, rubbed her eyes.
What time is it where you are? What's up?
We don't know exactly, said Han. We know we have a problem, but we're not sure what it means. What can you tell us about Belsavis?
Ah.
Mara settled back in the white leather chair, which shifted around her like a flower.
The file on it was closed when I started working for the Emperor. Closed files always have the same effect on me. But when I broke into it, I couldn't find out anything, except that at the end of the Clone Wars, there'd been some kind of secret mission whose target was one of the rift valleys on Belsavis. A fighter wing was sent there, interceptors mostly, and a whole chain of remote trigger relay stations was set up, completely automated. But what it was they were supposed to activate or signal, I never could find out. I gathered there was supposed to be a link-up with something that never arrived. But later I got copies of some of the Emperor's private invoices, and there were millions paid out about that date to an engineer named Oran Keldor.
I know about Oran Keldor, said Leia softly. He was a student of Magrodi's, one of the designers of the Death Star.
For a few years there was a lot of salvage running out there. Xylan ships, gold wire, some old jewelry. I went there once, around the time of the Battle of Hoth, but Nublik the Slight, the boss among the smugglers, had a tight grip on the locals, and I couldn't stay long enough to figure things out.
Han had heard about Nublik from one of the locals, a fruit picker he had met in a bar. The Slight had disappeared without a trace about 6 years ago. Look familiar? Solo fished the gleaming Xylan ship from his pocket.
That's the stuff. You ever do the Belsavis run, Han? There's a spot in the southern hemisphere that's far enough from any rift or vent to be atmospherically stable about the same time every 24 hours. The Corridor, it's called. Because of the storms and the ionization in the upper atmosphere, they can't track anyone who's not coming down a charted beam. You come in high, drop fast, and run along close to the ice to one of the pads.
Yeah, I've heard about the pads out on the ice, said Han.
I could look up the coordinates if it would help. Nublik started thermoblasting them right after the Clone Wars, when Brathlin and Galactic first came to the planet. That kept the people running the goods in and out through the corridor dependent on Nublik, because only he knew where the tunnel heads were.
And Drub McCum was one of the guys who ran the corridor, Leia said. Leia sat up in bed, confused and panicky. R2? She'd been sound asleep, but she was sure she had heard the overload alarm on a blaster. Leia felt, rather than saw, Han reach for the holster that hung beside the bed, and at the same moment, the glare of R2-D2's cutting beam illuminated the droid as he neatly fused the lock of the cupboard in the corner of the room. What the... Leia hit the light switch by the bed. Nothing happened. In a panic of confusion, her mind reached out, groped for the candles which floated in a basin of water on the bedside table. Fire sprang to life on the floating wicks.
You crazy little...
Han strode across the room to where R2 had posted himself in front of the cupboard door. In the same instant, R2 swung around and pointed his cutting torch in Han's direction. The white bolt of electricity leapt out. Han sprang backward, barely avoiding it. R2! Cried Leia, confused and suddenly scared. R2 backed against the cupboard, his welding arm held out and gleaming dangerously. The blaster's whine scaled upwards, warning of an explosion that would certainly destroy most of the house. Han was moving in on the little droid with a blanket in one hand, as if he planned to smother the electric charge of the welder. Han struck. R2 lunged at him, lightning leaping forth, and in that instant, Leia scooped up the water basin and hurled it at the droid. Han leapt back, and the vast drench of water doused the electrical discharge of R2's cutting tool in a spatter of blue light and spraying sparks. Smoke and lightning poured from the droid's open hatch, small threads of blue electricity leaping and twitching as R2 gave one frantic, despairing scream. Han sprang past him, driving one foot through the cupboard door and digging out the blasters. He ripped the power cores out of both blasters and hurled the stripped weapons across the room onto the bed, where Leia buried them under pillows.
The triggering blast,
without the power that would have vaporized everything in the room, was like a violent hiccup. Chewbacca smashed his way through the bedroom door. For a moment, there was stillness. The room was filled with the stench of burning feathers and scorched insulation. Chewie grieved over R2, who, blackened by the electrical discharge, sat motionless. Dead.